Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituary, Odessa. James L. Elder, Jr. James was many things to many people: husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, uncle, brother, friend, coach, and teacher. James Lamar Elder, Jr. was born on August 23, 1950, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He was 71 years old. He is survived by his wife, Hazel Elder, and son, John Moss Elder, and wife, Deborah, daughter, Tiffany Elder Walker, and husband, David, and four grandchildren. Coach Elder was a coach and a teacher with ECISD for 32 years. He also coached and taught at St. Mary's Central Catholic School and Sherwood Christian School in Odessa, Texas. Although retired, he never stopped coaching, and he will be dearly missed by everyone. James enjoyed playing golf with his son and grandsons back in his better years. He played all over West Texas and Ruidoso, New Mexico. James lives in France for a brief time as a youngster. He attended military school in Texas after returning from his adventures in France. James was born to James and Eloise Elder and was the grandson of the late John and Virgie Moss. James spent many years in Las Vegas, Nevada with his beloved grandparents. Memorial in honor of James will be held in Lubbock, Texas at the Pioneer Building, 1204 Broadway Street, Lubbock, Texas, 79423, Sunday, August 28th at 3 p.m.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, August 20th from the Obituary and Death Notice section. In Odessa, Donna Marie Lindsay, age 64, returned to her Heavenly Father on Sunday, August 14th, after a battle with cancer. Memorial services will be held on Wednesday, August 24th at 10 a.m. at West Acres Funeral Chapel. She was born December 31st, 1957, in Rotan, Texas, to Elta May and Earl Wesley Smith. She is preceded in death by her father, grandparents, Beatty and Tom McDonald, and all of her aunts and uncles. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the American Cancer Society in Donna's honor. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel. Condolences to the family may be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. In Odessa, Tommy Royce Evans, age 84, passed away on August 17th. Born December 9th, 1937, in his Littlefield home to J.D. and Connie Evans, he grew up in Littlefield with a love for music and with the love of his life, Gracie Russell. Tommy was preceded in death by his parents, J.D. and Connie, his brothers James and Kenneth, and his granddaughter, Bethany Heckert. He is survived by his wife of 61 years, daughter Linda, daughter Carol, and many grandchildren. A memorial service will be held Monday, August 22nd at 11 a.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home with Craig Evans officiating. In Odessa, Ralph Fuque, 66, passed away Wednesday, August 10th at University Medical Center in Lubbock. Ralph was born January 12th, 1956 in Odessa to Ralph Fuque, Sr. and Betty Louise Fuque. He was preceded in death by his parents, Ralph Fuque and Betty Freeman, and his sister, Judy Foreman. The family is having a private memorial. In Odessa, Stephen Wayne Hammond, 59, died on Wednesday, August 10th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, August 21st. PSP, Healthcare Hub, still in process, Odessa American. Permian Strategic Partnership is involved in discussions to create a healthcare hub at Highway 191 and FM 1788 in Midland County, where a behavioral health center would also be located. PSP contracted with the Chartis Group, a well-known healthcare consultant firm. PSP President CEO Tracy Bentley said this is the most unique and largest area they have ever done an assessment for. It included West Texas and southeastern New Mexico. There were conversations going on with Midland Memorial and Medical Center Hospital about the need for behavioral health. Right about that time, the initial assessment results came out and it really confided the need. PSP, when we knew we wanted to start making significant investments in healthcare, some of the things we knew we would be investing were obvious. We know we need some doctors, some nurses, more healthcare professionals in general, I would say, Bentley said. But we wanted to make sure that all our investments were really backed by facts and that we weren't just guessing, that we knew the critical places that we needed to make investments. And so we partnered with Scarborough Foundation, the University of Texas System in Texas, Texas Tech Health Sciences, to oversee a regional assessment on health care. This assessment pointed out there are some areas in need that you all might want to look at to elevate health care in your region, she added. We started that in October of 2020 because we asked them to assess a very large region. Within our large region, there are several independent health care systems that also need to be evaluated. So that's why it's taking so long and it's still, I would argue, not complete. We know we did get some initial results out of the earlier this year. The number one thing we came out for all of us was the lack of behavioral and mental health care for our area. This is why you're seeing us come out in very strong support of the new regional behavioral health center shared by Midland Odessa and really the entire region. It will just be between our two communities, but it's meant for the entire Permian Basin. It's very exciting, Bentley said. The second thing that came out was the need for more specialty care. I think we all knew that, but having the study really point to that, say, when you have almost 50%, so far this number astounded me, 45% of Permian residents leave the area for specialty health care. 45%. We have to do better than that, so we need to be working on getting specialists here so that people don't have to leave. A lot of people, I think, we don't realize, don't have the option of leaving for health care, even if they wanted to. It's widely expensive and not everybody has those resources, and so everybody in the community, we owe it to ourselves to do everything we possibly can so that every Permian Basin resident has access to high-quality specialty care, Bentley said. The third thing that came out was they need to take a hard look at the level of care that's appropriate for regional industry. Is a level 3 trauma okay for where it's at and the industry around us, or should we really be looking at level 2 or level 1? Of course, costs are associated with all of these, and we understand that. But when we have men and women out in the field and they have acute injury and flying them to Lubbock or to Dallas is the only option and the best that we can do, I think it deserves a look. I'm not saying the answer is to immediately go out and build a level 2 or 1, but I'm saying we need to be analyzing these things because that's important for the health and safety of the region, Bentley said. She noted that it can take an ambulance an hour sometimes to get to some sites after accidents. We can't fix the remoteness of where we are, but we really can look, do have most efficient emergency care and system in place. What are we lacking? Maybe we have the right system. We just need to coordinate. All these things are being looked at because sometimes it's an issue, Bentley said. There are conversations going on with Medical Center and Midland Memorial about need for behavioral health, and then right about the same time, the initial Chartis results were issued. It's really coexisted the need that they said, okay, if this assessment is saying this is the first thing that needs to happen, let's really push to make this happen. So the timing was really good, Bentley said. On the healthcare hub, repurposing the existing hospital buildings and locating a healthcare facility at 191 and 1788, she said, they are far from figuring those things out. Right now, they're still in the question of whether it's feasible and whether it will elevate healthcare in the community. Because if we can answer yes to both of those, this is not a good fit. So talking about empty buildings and we're going to put this or that, we're always off from. Right now, we want to know how or would the Permian Basin benefit from an academic medical center, and do the benefits outweigh the cons? I will tell you other regions who have had academic medical centers have benefited hugely when it comes to economics. It's another economic driver that can add to our economy diversity. I don't know anybody who doesn't think that's a good idea. And so exploring, I think that it would like to know, does this make sense or does it not, she said. But looking at something new is a good thing, Bentley added. That doesn't mean it's inevitable, but exploring what our possibilities are to help bring world-class healthcare to the Permian Basin. This is really the goal of this entire project, she added. Everyone would like more specialists to be available here. Those are all the things that we're looking at. In fact, in May, we supported an initiative with Texas Tech that will increase surgeons, cardiologists, and pulmonologists. I believe all specialty care that we need more of that will hopefully come to our area, do a fellowship, and then stay, which is always our goal, Bentley said. She said they are focused right now on getting the Behavioral Health Center across the finish line. Reps Brooks Granlath, Republican, Odessa, and Tom Craddock, Republican, Midland, joined forces last year on Senate Bill 8 to direct how the state will spend federal dollars associated to Texas under the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. The legislation includes $40 million for a behavioral health center that will be construction operated by the health districts of Midland and Ector County. Landgraf and Craddock worked together to ensure the funding was included in the final version of the bill, a news release said. The center will include 100 patient beds, an outpatient psychiatric care facility, along with a crisis stabilization unit, professional offices and counseling, and therapeutic spaces appropriate for all ages. Texans who live in the Permian Basin currently have to drive to Lubbock or San Angelo to access similar care, the release said. That is what Bentley said the business and community leaders are focused on right now. She added that they are working to raise another $45 million for the Behavioral Health Center. As soon as we feel confident that, in fact, inevitable, all the money is raised, the architect firms are ready to go and we're ready to break ground. I think it's when we will start focusing on future projects, Bentley said. I do think, though, there are things even more decisions is made on the academic medical center that we could be doing. Again, going back to specialty care, so having a pediatric center maybe is something that the assessment said that we could and we should do at this point. The potential of a regional cancer center would be, I think, a real gem for our community. Again, it makes sense, Bentley said. Asked about the PSP campaign to get people vaccinated against COVID, Bentley said she thinks they started off at 40-43% vaccinated in the Permian Basin when the campaign started. We wrapped up our campaign April of this year, and we were able to increase vaccinations by 17%. While we would have liked to have seen more, we were also happy to know that 17% of Permian residents decided to get vaccinated, so we're proud of that campaign. We learned an awful lot, and we hope that we made a difference, Bentley said. PSP also helps small regional cities to acquire grants with the West Texas Rural Grant Initiative. Bentley said PSP was able to help cities with infrastructure grants for water and sewer systems, as well as new libraries, broadband, law enforcement, and safety personnel grants. This initiative for us is one that, in addition to helping with the resources to apply for these grants, we're also working alongside each community, showing them how to go about the process and where to look, Bentley said. She added that it's meant to be self-sustaining. It takes resources to get resources. We have the same program in New Mexico, and we're finding is, after a couple of grant applications under their belt, they now feel more confident on how to write a great grant and largely be successful. It's very daunting. If you've ever looked at a grant application, especially at the federal level, it's overwhelming. But going through a couple of times with somebody who knows how to do it makes all the difference, Bentley said. Inflation Reduction Act stirs debate. Perryman, Pfluger, Ingram, Review Effects on Energy Industry by Bob Campbell. Just passed by Congress and signed into law by President Biden, the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act will have a significant impact on the oil and gas business. Economics Ray Perryman and Carr Ingram and Congressman August Pfluger say the bill will do many things, but one thing it won't do is make much of a dent in inflation. Saying the legislature will only have modest impacts on inflation over a period of years, Perryman also observed that it has a lot of different facets that affect the energy industry. Just about every segment of this thing is like to dislike, the Waco economist said Thursday. Some parts of the energy world would have been quite content for nothing to pass, while others think it should have been much more sweeping. In that case, it is reminiscent of the types of legislation that used to pass in the days when there were more collaboration and cooperation among the parties. This bill, despite being passed by only one very diverse party, aptly reflects George Will's dictum that democracy is the policy of the half loaf. It's a safe bet that one party will praise it more than it deserves while the other will be overly critical. Perryman said the law mandates drilling on some key federal leases and makes future renewable leases contingent on fossil fuel activity. It also incentivizes carbon capture technology, which enhances the viability of oil and gas in the world in which climate change is a reality, he said. The provisions dealing with the methane are potentially costly, but in reality they reflect efforts that are already well underway to reduce its efforts. One of the more encouraging aspects of the bill is recognition of the need for additional pipeline capacity. On the other hand, it extends some provisions that have limited refining capacity. I would have liked to see some inducements to shift production to lower carbon oil, as some of our recent analysis show that to be highly beneficial, some market forces will drive that phenomenon in any case. In an August 12th House floor speech in Washington, D.C., Pfluger said he was voting against the bill because it weakens Americans' businesses, increases the cost of energy for families, and funds a new 87,000-person Internal Revenue Service army to audit low- and middle-income families. Here's a pretty good rule of thumb for this legislation, the San Angelo Republican said. If you are one of the Biden-chosen green special interest groups, you get a handout paid for by the American taxpayer. But for the small, independent American energy producers in the Permian Basin, your reward for keeping the light on is a newly poorly conceived natural gas tax that will raise the cost of everything and get China an edge on our American manufacturers. Pfluger said the law gives tax credits for the rich, a slush fund for loans to be their favorite green companies, and more regulatory red tape to drive up the energy costs for Main Street businesses and families. The crowning achievement of this measure won't be inflation being reduced. It will be making Americans more dependent on our adversities for hydrocarbons, more dependent on Chinese medical manufacturing and supply chains, and more dependent on China for critical minerals, he said. If the Democrats' goal is to reduce baseload reliable power sources and increase our dependency on foreign nations, they've succeeded. If their goal is to create regulatory red tape to drive up energy costs for Main Street businesses and families, they're succeeding. If their goal is to help American families and small businesses, they are absolutely failing. One straight party line vote, the bill passed by 220-207 in the House and 51-50 in the Senate. Perriman said the law extend but modifies many of the incentives for renewable that were set to expire and encourages segments such as hydrogen and battery storage to accelerate development. It also incentivizes the use of distributed generation such as solar panels by individual customers, he said. Although the scale will be likely more relatively small, this type of activity can take some pressure off the power grid. The incentive to electric vehicles will likely accelerate purchases to some extent, Perriman said. This can have some effects environmentally because if power plants install carbon capture technology, and it will expand the demand for both renewables and natural gas. In fact, the effect on natural gas requires are quite large as such of the incremental power is generated by gas, and there's about 55% reduction in British thermal units as the conversion to electricity happens. On balance, it's a measure that will likely please and disappoint all, Perriman said. Its impact on climate issues will likely be positive, but measured. Given where we seem to be heading before it was passed, it is likely to encourage production of all forms of energy and provide a more predictable investment climate. The world is going to require significantly more of all forms of energy in the future, even as we address climate issues. From that perspective, it is overall a positive but not revolutionary step forward. Calling the law the Inflation Reinforcement Act, Ingram said, it will do nothing to reduce inflation, and even those who claim it will say the downward effects on inflation will occur years from now, not in the near term when Americans need it most. As has been the case leading up to the passage of the bill, continuing to throw hundreds of billions of government spending into the economy will be inflationary, not deflationary, Ingram said Thursday. The energy-related component of the bills are hundreds of billions of dollars for climate change and a new tax on the production of natural gas in the United States. The methane fee, otherwise known as the new federal natural gas production tax, will be assessed on natural gas producers large and small, and is very likely to endanger small independent oil and gas producers in Texas and elsewhere. The Amarillo Economist said the methane fee is the first instance of a direct fee that tax imposed on federal government on greenhouse gas emissions. And to do what, he asked. The U.S. economy has managed to do something miraculous, dramatically expand domestic oil and gas production and dramatically expand consumption of those products as the economy has grown and produced more to reduce reliance on foreign production, while at the same time steadily lowering total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions for nearly three decades, along with the U.S. global share of greenhouse gas emissions. Ingham said the bill will raise the cost of energy and worsen the damage to the American oil and gas business while achieving little to no environmental benefits. The climate provisions of the bill will continue to artificially incentivize an energy mix that forces a shift to renewables, such as faster than the market would otherwise bring about, he said. That will subject U.S. households and businesses to less available and reliable energy at a high cost. Only an energy transition that is purely market-driven can cause something to happen that needs to happen over an amount of time necessary for those possessions to fall into place naturally. Why would the United States, with only 12% of total global greenhouse gas emissions, unilaterally inflict such great damage on its own economy and its extraordinary domestic oil and gas industry, with virtually no effect on global greenhouse gas emissions? But that is exactly what we are about to do. Death notices. Barbara Jo Parker, 70, of Odessa, died Friday, August 12th, in Odessa. No service had been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, August 22nd. Deadline to run for council is today. The story was written by Kim Smith. Three people have announced their intention to run for the Odessa City Council so far, and the deadline to turn in applications is 5 p.m. today. Chris Haney and Shay Lane will be running for the District 5 seat being vacated by Mari Willis, and Greg Connell has put his hat in the ring for outgoing District 4 Councilmember Tom Sprawls. As of 5 p.m. Friday, no one had announced their intention of seeking District 3 Councilmember Deitra White's position. All three incumbents recently announced they were not running again. Lane, who is 50 years old, is an associate pastor at River of Hope and an office assistant for Stark Surveying. The married mother of two and grandmother of three was born and raised in Odessa. She's a relative newcomer to the world of politics. Quote, I've recently gotten involved in the last few years because of the shape of our country. I felt like if we want change in Washington, D.C., we have to start locally first, Lane said. She's gotten to know several past candidates for office and been attending council meetings, she said. If elected, Lane says she wants to bridge the gap she believes exists between the citizens of Odessa and government officials. Quote, to me, it doesn't matter what party you are. Our hearts matter, the relationship between the people, that's what matters. The people of Odessa, we want change to see change. From my experience, just going out and knocking on doors, people want to be relational, and that's been lost. People want you to be real, and they want you to do what you say you're going to do. End quote. She'd like to see more activities on the west side. Although improvements are being made at Floyd Gwynn Park, she believes the west side has been forgotten to a certain extent. She's also interested in public safety. Quote, I have an elderly mother. I'm 50 years old, and obviously I'm a woman. I have daughters. I have granddaughters, and we don't feel safe in this town, and I would like to see some real change happen here, Lane said. I want to advocate for our police department. I want to advocate for our firemen and bring awareness to both of those entities, end quote. The other District 5 candidate, Chris Haney, is a married father of three girls and has three grandchildren. Haney, who has lived in District 5 for 20 years, is a salesman for Emory Industrial Services. The greeter and prayer partner at Odessa Christian Faith Center said he wants to bring God back to our government and would like Odessa to be a sanctuary city from abortions. Quote, I will voice my concerns, and as a Christian conservative, if it goes against God, I'm not supporting it, Haney said via email. Roads and water are among his top priorities, along with getting the city's spending under control, he said. Quote, I feel that as a grandparent, we are falling short on how our tax dollars are being spent on bridges crossing roads. How about put up red lights that doesn't run in the millions, Haney wrote. We don't need a 75-mile-an-hour bypass, which, by the way, it's $10 million in the negative on the same project, end quote. Haney said the west side of Odessa is being ignored, specifically West County Road, 2nd Street, and neighborhood roads. Quote, it takes more to fix roads than throwing rocks on top of what's there. They just passed a $36 million pave of Faudry Road. They should have thrown rocks on it. The road isn't that bad, Haney wrote. Earlier this month, the Odessa City Council voted 4-2 to spend $36 million to widen Faudry Road from a two-lane road to an urban five-lane road from State Highway 191 to Yukon Road. Haney also alluded to the recent waterline break on 42nd Street that left residents without drinkable water for nearly a week. Quote, water is the next problem, and no idea what to do about it is not the answer when you don't have the parts to fix a problem on the shelf, and we have to wait on parts and cost $100,000 in lost revenue for the city, which there is $95 million to fix the water sitting in a bank instead of doing what this bond was to do, Haney wrote. In August 2021, the city council decided to pay $95 million to rehabilitate the city's water treatment plant using certificates of obligation. Connell, age 67, moved to Odessa almost 5 years ago from Washington State. The retiree has spent time in a variety of professions. He spent 4 years in the U.S. Marine Corps and 3 in the reserves. He ran a work furlough program for the California Department of Corrections for 4 years. He worked for Henderson Enterprises in California and spent years in banking. Most recently, Connell, the father of one adult son, volunteered at Downing Elementary. Connell says he believes the United States has, quote, serious problems and is being run by an administration that came to power by illegitimate means. When he received a postcard in the mail from the GOP asking him if he is patriotic and if he loves his country, he was intrigued and sent an email. Soon, he received a call and sat down for a chat with Tisha Crowe, Ector County Republican Party chairman, and others within the party. Quote, they were seeing openings as broad as maybe the school board and things like that, but they were looking to see where they could steer conservative candidates in these positions, Connell said. I think they were probably interviewing several people, and I sent them an email back and said, thank you for the interview, and I really want you to pick the best person, and it just boiled out, finished out that they had selected me for the 4th District for City Council, end quote. Connell said he discovered Odessans are concerned about crime and infrastructure and hopes to help address those issues. He's been attending council meetings lately to familiarize himself. Quote, there just appears to be a councilman and maybe two councilwomen leaning a little bit too moderate Republican, not looking at budgeting aspects of pretty large things coming down the pipeline, Connell said. In other words, not conservative. I just think the council needs to be more conservative in the budgeting and the expenditures of large projects that are helping, let's say, maybe the good old boy projects instead of what really the people need, end quote. His Christian faith would play a big role if he's elected, Connell said. Quote, I try to use those teachings to guide me and how I interact, Connell said. It's to be fair and open and kind and gentle and a protector of those I see that need that, end quote.
This is Jane, reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, August 20th. To your good health. Dr. Keith Roach. Herbal product helps with GI issues. Dear Dr. Roach, I have had gastroparesis for many years. About 2 years ago, it led to a small intestinal bacterial growth, which I once read about in your column. I worked with a dietitian for several months. One of the treatments she suggested was an herbal product called Iberogast. The combination of herbs helps the stomach to empty quicker. I use it each night before bed as part of a 12-hour fast or whenever I have overeaten and feel bad. It has been most helpful for me. Iberogast is available online. L.E. Answer. First, for the benefit of other readers, gastroparesis is a too slow emptying of the digestive system. Iberogast is a combination of 9 medicinal plant extracts, and studies in Germany and Austria, where it is most commonly used, have shown the medication to be more effective than the placebo in the treatment of functional dyspepsia and irritable bowel disease. The medication has generally been regarded as safe, but there are rare cases of liver injury associated with this medication, at least one of which eventually required liver transplantation. All medications, whether prescription or over-the-counter, natural or synthetic, have the potential for harm. Iberogast is pretty safe, with a handful of bad outcomes in its 50 years of use involving millions of doses, but it still can cause rare and severe adverse effects. Iberogast is worth considering in people whose symptoms have not been successfully treated with other therapies.
Daughter's fiancé often makes puzzling remarks. Dear Abby, my lovely and successful 30-year-old daughter has recently become engaged to a 31-year-old man I'll call Jonas. They have been dating for several years. He comes from a good family and is successful in his career. She adores him and is extremely happy. The problem is, Jonas has a habit of making off-the-cuff comments about her to my husband and me behind her back, suggesting, for example, that he felt a bit pressured about the timetable for proposing. More recently, I thanked him for offering my daughter and me the use of his beloved vehicle to go wedding dress shopping. Instead of saying, "You're welcome," he muttered, "She's going to wreck the car one day. The sooner she does it, the sooner I get a new one." Abby, my daughter has an excellent driving record, so this was just weird. He says it like it's a dry joke, which he likely sees this way, but I find his comments hurtful. I haven't said anything to my daughter about this and don't want to run him down to family or friends by asking for suggestions in handling this. Should I let it go, or should I tell Jonas privately how his comments have hurt us? I don't want to make more of this than it is, but it makes my heart ache a bit. Signed, Concerned Mama in Illinois. Dear Mama, Jonas's joke that he felt pressured to become engaged to your daughter wasn't funny, and I can understand why you might be concerned. While I don't think you should solicit advice about this from friends and family, I do think you should discuss it with your daughter, because it could be a red flag. Ditto with any other possible pejorative comments he makes to you about her. There is often a grain of truth within comments that are made in jest. They could be a tip-off about what her fiancé is really feeling. Dear Abby, I'm 40 years old. I have had issues with my deadbeat father for my entire life. After Mom passed away, I tried to create a relationship with him because he was the only parent I had left. He then informed me that he stayed when my sister was born, but left when I was because I was never wanted. I suffered from depression for a long time and had been doing well for 3 years up to that point. Now my hatred for him has consumed me so much I find it hard to love myself. I look so much like him that when I look in the mirror I can't stand the reflection looking back at me. How can I love myself again or feel like I'm worthy enough to be loved? How do I look at myself and not see the monster that is my bio dad? Please help. Signed, Filled with Hate in the Midwest. Dear Filled with Hate, you have suffered enough. You will regain your self-acceptance, sense of self-worth, and rid yourself of your father's baggage with help from a licensed psychotherapist. If your finances are stretched, contact your county's Department of Mental Health for low-cost or no-cost help. Universities and colleges that have a Department of Psychology can also provide counseling on a sliding scale. It's the surest way to repair the damage your father has inflicted. please don't wait to reach out.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.